భద్రం కర్ణేభిశ్శృణుయామదేవా భద్రం పశ్యేమాక్షభిర్యజత్రాః స్థిరైరంగైః తుష్టువాంసస్తనూభిః వ్యసేమదేవహితం యదాయుః స్వస్తిన ఇంద్రో వృద్ధశ్రవాః స్వస్తినః పూషా విశ్వవేదాః స్వస్తినస్తాక్షో వరిష్టనేమిః స్వస్తినో బృహస్పతిర్దధాతు. ఓం శాంతి శాంతి శాంతి. ఆల్మైటీ గాడ్, మే వి హియర్ విత్ అవర్ ఇయర్స్ వాట్ ఈస్ ఆస్పీషియస్, మే వి సీ విత్ అవర్ ఐస్ వాట్ ఈస్ ఆస్పీషియస్, మే వి వైల్ ఆఫరింగ్ అవర్ ప్రేజ్ టు గాడ్ విత్ అవర్ బాడీ స్ట్రాంగ్ లింబ్స్ ఎంజాయ్ ద లైఫ్ విత్ ద ఆల్మైటీ గాడ్ ఎస్ ప్లీజ్ టు గ్రాంట్ అస్. May Indra of great fame be well disposed to us. May the all-knowing reality, the sun, be propitious to us. May Garuda, the vanquisher of all miseries, and the one who brings joy and happiness and peace, be well pleased with us. May the Guru, the teacher of the entire creation, grant us all prosperity. Om peace, peace, peace. Now, we have been dealing with a very important topic when we discussed the 14th, 15th, 16th and 17th verses of the second chapter of the Mandukya Karika. Now, from 20th verse onwards, the author of this book is discussing a very important aspect of Vedanta philosophy. See, the question arises, if we are that Supreme Consciousness, the immanent or pervading reality, then why is it that we are not aware of this? What is the reason? What conceals this reality from our understanding, from our perception? See, normal life, we are not aware of the fact that we are the omnipresent, all-pervading, the immanent reality. We mistake ourselves to be everything other than the Supreme Consciousness. If we are aware of the Supreme, our true reality, if we are aware of our true nature, then we shall never feel depressed, miserable, happy or unhappy. We will be always in a state of supreme bliss, because though the reality cannot be defined, the words and scriptures make an attempt to define it. And what is the definition? That definition is that the supreme reality, the consciousness, the Atman, is eternal bliss, eternal consciousness, and eternal joy, eternal knowledge. That's how the scriptures try to define the reality. Scriptures do insist that the supreme reality is a matter of intuitive experience, and that experience can never be explained. Still, the scriptures make an attempt to define it, while admitting that it cannot be defined. Sarya Satchidanandam Brahma, you must have heard in the script, Satchit Anandam is Brahman. Brahman or Atman is Sat, the absolute existence. And Chit, the absolute knowledge. And Ananda, the absolute bliss. Now, if we are that absolute reality, which is absolute knowledge, absolute bliss and absolute existence, then why are we unaware of this? And we behave, we act as if we think ourselves to be just this body or this mind. This body which comes and goes, and this mind which is sometimes happy and sometimes unhappy. Now, by way of explaining this mystery, Gaudapada, the author of this book, this work, describes 35 types of superimpositions. Superimposition means instead of understanding that we are the Supreme Consciousness, we mistake ourselves to be this body. So, body consciousness is a superimposition on the Atman. And when we superimpose body consciousness on the Atman, we think that we are this body. When we identify ourselves to be happy or unhappy, or when we identify ourselves to be something which is happy now and unhappy later, we are identifying ourselves to be the mind. So mind is superimposed upon the Supreme Reality. Likewise, Gaudapada, the author of this book, describes 35 types of superimpositions. We try to think of ourselves to be 35 things which really we are not. Sometimes in some books you find 36, but that is just a different view. I mean, there are two types of explaining some of these verses, so I won't go into those details. Now, these 35 superimpositions are explained in 9 verses, from 20 to 28 verse. In 9 verses, Gaudapada, the author of this book, describes 35 types of 35 ways in which we mistake ourselves to be other than the reality, the Atman. Now, before entering that subject, we have to discuss a very important point, which is an important philosophical idea in Vedanta. And that is this. Vedanta stresses one important fact. That is, liberation is not the product of anything. Or rather, the Atman is not the product of anything. So, sometimes, you know, it is called Atman is, in the Sanskrit language, if you are reading the original book, you find na utpadya. Utpadya means something which could be created. Na utpadya means it cannot be created. You can manufacture a pot from clay. The pot maker is the efficient cause. Clay is the material cause. So you can manufacture, you can create, you can produce a pot or a pan from clay. Now, Atman is not the result, not the effect of any act of creating, producing, or manufacturing. Why? Because it is eternal. The word used in Sanskrit is nityam, means it is eternal. It is everlasting. Now, if something is everlasting, it certainly cannot be produced. Because it existed before it was produced, which means it cannot be produced. It is everlasting, it is eternal. So when we really get liberation, when we really get spiritual liberation, when we realize the fact that we are the Atman, that we are the Supreme Consciousness, we are actually not getting a new knowledge. We are only removing the wrong notion that we normally entertained. We are removing superimpositions. When we mistake ourselves to be this body, the body consciousness is superimposed on Atman. When we realize we are the Atman, that we are the Atman, we are not getting a new knowledge. We are just removing the wrong notion that we have. And that wrong notion was that we are this body. Just as in the example that we often quoted, see, you have to remember always that example. It's a very important example. The dimly lit room in which there is an object lying coiled up. It resembles the shape of a snake. There is not enough light. So people may mistake that object to be a stick or a snake or a crack on the floor or a thin stream of water. It is actually a piece of rope. It's a tiny piece of rope lying on the floor. But if there is not enough light, then you may mistake that rope to be a snake, a stick, or a thin stream of light, or something like that. When you bring light, and when you realize that it is a piece of rope, you are not producing the rope. There was darkness which stood in the way of your understanding that it was a piece of rope. When you brought light, what happened? The darkness vanished. Light came, but the light doesn't produce the rope. Light only removes the darkness, which was the obstacle which stood in your way of realizing the truth that it is a piece of rope. So snake has vanished. If you thought it was a snake, it has vanished. If you thought it was a piece of stick, the stick has vanished. Vanished in the sense it really did not exist. So it did not vanish. It existed only in your mind because at that time you are ignorant of the fact that it was a piece of rope. So you are not producing a new rope. Similarly, when we realize that we are the Atman, we are not getting a new knowledge. We are actually rediscovering our true nature. So that is one important characteristic of Advaita Vedanta. When we realize our true nature, we are not producing something new. This knowledge or the Atman or the liberation, which is the result of this realization, is not a creation or product of an act of creation. The second point is that it is not something that you attain, that you reach, that you obtain, which you had not already attained or obtained earlier. See, when you travel from San Francisco to another city, you are leaving this place behind and you are reaching a new place. So that involves a movement from one place to another place, leaving something behind and reaching a new place. But the knowledge, the realization of the new, of our true nature is not attaining, obtaining, or reaching a new place, because the Atman is omnipresent. It is all-pervading. There is nothing, nowhere in the world in which that Atman is not present. So you are not obtaining or attaining or reaching a new place or a new object. You are actually where you have been earlier. You only rediscover your true nature. Now, the third important point to be remembered is, it is not a result of any kind of change. If you want to produce yogurt, you produce that yogurt from milk, and it is, that means the milk changes its structure, its character, its taste, and you get yogurt or curds, whatever you may call it. So it undergoes a change, and the change is called in Sanskrit vikaraha, means the change. So it is not vikarya, means it is not the result of any kind of change that takes place anywhere. We are not changing. As I said, we are rediscovering our true nature. When we remove darkness, we are not producing anything new. We are just realizing the true nature of the object that lies in front of you, which is a piece of rope. So this Atman, or this liberation, this knowledge or jnanam, is not the result of any kind of change. That's how you produce curd from milk. So you have to you have to change the structure of milk and you get curd. Similarly, you have to reach a place, leaving some other place behind. It is called apya or prapya, mean moksha or liberation or the non-dualistic realization is not a result of obtaining, attaining, or reaching a place, leaving behind another place. Again, it is not a result of any kind of act of creation or production. Then there is a fourth factor. Atman is not a result of any kind of act of refining or processing. See, if you want petroleum, you had to the crude material should undergo a process of processing or refining. That's called refineries. That's what refineries are meant for. Now, again, if you want oil, you have to refine, you have to process some kind of seeds. Of course, this example can be fit with the other example also. So, if you want pure petroleum, then that crude material should undergo a process of refining or processing. And for that, you have to add something to it. See, if there is a stain on your clothes, then you have to use some chemical. Then when you add a chemical to the spot where there is stain, the stain goes away. So the stain goes away when you establish a link or an association between that dark spot and the chemical. So something has to be added, and then something will be lost. The stain will be lost when you add that a little chemical that is used for this purpose while washing to that spot. So it is called a kind of refining. So Atman or liberation or spiritual knowledge in Vedanta is not the result of any kind of act of creation, refining, processing, or changing. We are only removing the wrong notions that we normally entertain. And these wrong notions are the result of ignorance. So, that's why, as I said earlier, in Vedanta, we accept the theory of error and not the theory of evil. There is no such thing as a personalized evil. We are ignorant of our true nature. So we mistake ourselves to be this body, the son of this person, the father of that person. Then we worry, we become miserable, we become happy, we become unhappy, and we become victims of different moods, psychological and mental moods, and so on. Now, the only remedy from this state of unhappiness is to realize that the supreme truth, that we are the Atman, which is of the nature of supreme existence, supreme knowledge, and supreme bliss. This is a point to be remembered when we go through these verses from 20 to 28, verse 9 verses, in which Gaudapada explains 35 different views held by 35 different schools of thoughts. Some of them were very, very popular during his time, like the Sankhya philosophy, which is one of the theistic systems of ancient Indian philosophical systems, and some of the Bauddhas, some of the Buddhist schools of thought, and so on. Some of the minor schools of philosophy are also mentioned by Gaudapada. We have to remember this book belongs to the late 6th century or the early 7th century AD. So maybe in those days, such systems of thought were prevalent at that time. Now we'll go to those verses. First one is 20th verse. The first, that is, sorry, yes, it is the description of these 35 superimpositions begin with the 20th verse. But before that, the 19th verse, Gaudapada refers to that. Pranadibhi anantaischa bhavaihi etaihi vikalpitaha mayaisha tasya devasya yaya sammohita swayam. This is the verse. The meaning is this. This Atman, this Supreme Consciousness, is imagined as prana, etc. Different schools of thought will discuss this point. And other different entities. Shankaracharya, who has commented upon all other verses, is silent on these 9 verses because according to him, it makes no difference as to what you mistake yourself to be. Because there is a piece of robe lying there. If there are 10 people who mistake that object in 10 different ways, it doesn't make much difference whether one person mistakes that robe to be snake or another person mistakes that rope to be a stick or whatever it is. Because all these are mistakes, all these superimpositions are errors from the standpoint of Advaita. So Shankaracharya, the great commentator, has not written any commentary on these verses. But from some writers who wrote super commentaries, like Anandagiri and others, on Shankaracharya's commentary, has explained the different schools of thought that Gaudapada is referring to in these verses. The 20th verse, prana iti pranavidu bhutani iti chatadvidaha, guna iti gunavidaha, tattvani iti tadvidaha. This is the verse. First, Gaudapada refers to one school of thought. Some philosophers believe that prana is the cause of this universe. Prana is the absolute reality. Prana means vital energy. This is a reference to a particular school of thought. They were not so very prominent as the great philosophical schools of Buddhism, the Sankhya, Yoga, or the logical school of Nayayikas and others. It was just a fringe group who believed that vital energy is the final cause of the entire universe. The reality manifests itself as vital energy. So the supreme reality is not different from vital energy or prana. Everything vibrates. You come to know of the existence of something only when it manifests in front of you. Otherwise, you are not aware of it. So everything can be analyzed and explained in terms of prana. That was the view. Sometimes, you know, this school was the school of Hiranyagar Bhupasakaha, means those who try to project the view that Hiranyagarbha means the the totality of subtle energy manifestations is the ultimate cause of this universe. That was the school which Gaudapada is referring to in this verse. Then he refers to another school. You find the verse, you find Bhutani idi tadvidaha. Bhutani, actually it means the four elements. Akasha is left out. Earth, water, fire and air. Not space. Space is not included. So according to another school of thought, these four elements constitute this earth. This is a bit subtle philosophy. Of course, Gaudapada is here referring to an ancient school of materialism, Indian materialism. They were prominent right from 4th century BC onwards. There were four or five distinct schools of materialists in ancient India. Some of them believed that everything in this world takes place by accident. So sometimes they were called accidentalists, and the school of thought was known as accidentalism. You need not go for a cause for anything that takes place in this world. That means you live in the present. Now remember, there are two ways of living in eternal present. One is you consider only the present as the reality. Don't go for an antecedent or a precedent. Don't think of a cause. Everything takes place by accident. That is one school of thought. In ancient Sanskrit literature, they were sometimes called Nirnimittavada or Yadrichavada. These are the terms by which they were known. When you read the original books, this is the term they were using in those days. So they believed everything in this world takes place by accidents. Then there was another prominent school of Indian materialists. They were the forerunners of modern naturalists. In fact, these two schools were prominent in 4th or 5th century BC, these two schools of Indian materialists. The other school was known as the school of naturalists, naturalism. They believed, there may be a cause for everything, but that cause is an inseparable nature of the object, of the effect. If fire is hot, you don't think of a cause for it. That is its nature. So they do admit a cause, but that cause is it is inseparable from the effect. It is built in within the effect itself. That was the school. So, of course, there were other schools of thought, other schools of Indian materialists, who later merged with the views of Jaina philosophers in later centuries. Of course, we are not going into those details. So, Gaudapada says, these people, they were sometimes called Lokayatikaha or Charvakaha. It means they were Indian materialists who did not admit the existence of a cause different from the effect. And they believed in four elements: earth, water, fire and air. You can say even they were quite popular even when Vardhamana Mahavira, the founder of Jaina religion, was born. That is around, he was an elder contemporary of Buddha. So Buddha was born in 560 BC. So Vardhamana Mahavira, the founder of Jaina religion, was born perhaps 25-30 years before Buddha. So even during his time, these materialists were quite popular in India. And they believed in these four elements. Now, those of you who are familiar with Western thought, Well, remember, Thales also believed in a system of philosophy which is not very different, but he believed that water was the fundamental, water was the supreme reality, according to Thales. He believed around 6th or 7th century BC. Almost during the same time, separated by 150 years or so. So Gaudapada next refers to the second school of thought. They were Indian materialists. Then he refers to another guna iti guna vidaha. Gunas are, see, they believe in the three gunas, three characteristics. Sattuguna, rajoguna, and tamoguna. Sattuguna is related to knowledge, wisdom, serenity, and equanimity. Rajoguna is related to action, dynamism, and movement. Tamoguna is related to inertia, sleep, laziness, and ignorance. In fact, these three gunas, these three attributes, they combine together and they are responsible for the evolution of this universe according to the ancient Sankhya philosophers. And they believe that these three gunas, these three attributes are the cause of other tattvas. They call Mahat, the original reality. From this, the entire universe evolves according to them. But Gaudapada and also Shankaracharya, they do not accept this view, because they believe that if these three attributes are in perfect equilibrium, then there will be always dissolution. And if this equilibrium is disturbed, it will be always disturbed. Therefore, Gaudapada doesn't agree with this view. Then the fourth school mentioned is, you can put tattvani idi tadvidaha. Tattvani, it's a reference to an ancient school of theistic philosophy who believed in the existence of Shiva. They were mostly Shaivites, means those who were inclined to a particular school of theistic philosophy in ancient times. They believed that there were three fundamental principles. One is Atman, the other is ignorance or avidya, the third one is Shiva, they call the conscious reality, which create this universe. Now, Advaitins don't agree, because according to Advaitins, if you accept Atman, and also Shiva, and if you think that Shiva is distinct from Atman, then Atman will be non-sentient. Both cannot be sentient at the same time. You cannot say both are equally sentient, because one is a supreme reality. You can't say there are two supreme realities in this universe. Therefore, the non-dualistic philosophers don't agree with this view. This is another school. Here you have to remember, Gaudapada's plan, his purpose in referring to all these ancient schools of thought is, the real purpose is to point out the logical inconsistencies of these systems of thought. From a higher point of view, there is no logic in negating other systems of thought, because Advaitins themselves admitted earlier that non-Advaitic philosophers quarrel among themselves. Advaitins or non-dualists do not quarrel, because they admit the non-difference of all concepts. But then Gaudapada says, other systems of thought who believe that their view alone is correct and who try to establish a distinction and difference between world, the supreme reality, and different beings inhabiting this world cannot be an absolute view, cannot be a completely acceptable system of thought. That is the idea. He wants to establish that wherever you admit a distinction or difference, that view is flawed. It cannot be correct. The fundamental view is, the most acceptable view is the view based on the non-distinction, non-difference between different entities. The view that the supreme reality is one, it is beyond any idea of person, characteristics, creatorship, or qualities. It goes beyond all this. It transcends all kinds of distinctions and differences. It is built upon the ideal of oneness of existence, unity of existence. This is Gaudapada's view. But then there were so many other systems of thought who completely differed from this view. Those systems of thought did contain some elements of truth, some grains of truth, but they cannot be accepted to be wholly correct because they admit a distinction between the supreme reality on the one hand, the created world on the other, and different living beings living inhabiting in this world. That's why he is referring to all these systems of thought with the purpose of pointing out the logical inconsistency in any system of thought which makes a distinction between you and me, between God and man, and between different beings in this world. That's why he is referring to these 35 philosophical viewpoints which are prevailing during this time. It may be a bit tedious, it may look so, but from a philosophical point of view, for any student of philosophy, it is very interesting, because if you read these 9 verses from 20 to 28 verse, and if you make a thorough study of this, you find practically all systems of thought that you can find in any book of philosophy are referred to or hinted at here in these 9 verses. That's the idea. Highest idealism you find, subjective idealism you find, naturalism, positivism, empiricism, everything you find, existentialism, all that you find in these 35 types of superimpositions which Gaudapada refers to. Of course, we may not be able to make a thorough study of this, but I'll try to make a reference. So for a student of philosophy, it is worth the effort involved. Now, then there is the 21st verse. Pada idi pada vidaha, vishaya idi tad vidaha, loka idi loka vidaha, deva idi cha tad vidaha. This is the 21st verse. In 21st verse, 4 distinct schools of thought are referred to in the 21st verse. One is pada idi pada vidaha. This is a school of thought. We already explained earlier that Atman manifests, or Atman is present as Vishwa in Jagrat states, as a seer or experiencer. And Atman is also the seer or experiencer in dream state as Taijasa. And Atman is the seer or experiencer in deep sleep state as Prajna. We already referred to this when we are dealing with the Upanishad text. Now, there were some schools of thought who believed that these are 3 separate dimensions of Turiya or Atman. So Atman manifests independently as these three. Gaudapada says the same Atman manifests as the experiencer in waking state, and also as the experiencer in dream state, and also the experiencer in deep sleep state. The same Atman, the same reality. And he also pointed out, see, unless you admit the idea that the experiencer of waking state and the experiencer of the dream state are the same, you cannot explain the relationship between dream experiences and waking state experiences. Because in most of the common dreams, we find the waking state experiences are sometimes relived, re-experienced in subtle form. And again, when we come back to waking state, we are able to remember many of the dream experiences, which means the reality, the witness, the subject, the seer or experiencer of waking state is the same reality as the witness, the seer and the experiencer of the dream state. Otherwise, there will be no memory. Same seer, same experiencer remembers both. So, the unity at the level of experiencer is there. But there is diversity or plurality or difference at the level of the experienced. That's the point. There is unity at the level of seer, and there is plurality or differences at the level of the seen. That's the main difference. Now, there are some thinkers, there have been some thinkers in the 6th century or even earlier in the 4th century BC and all that, who believed that the Atman or reality manifests distinctly, differently, separately in all the three states. Gaudapada says that view is not, it cannot be accepted. It is not correct. That's why Shankaracharya, as I said earlier, he did not find any of these 9 verses worthy of his commentary, his masterly touch. Because one man thinks the rope is a snake, another man thinks a piece of stick or wood. So both are wrong. Then why should we discuss the different types of wrong perceptions? That was his idea. He didn't write any commentary on these verses. So that is the 5th superimposition. The 6th superimposition is Vishaya Idi Tadvitaka. Some people think, well, there is only one absolute reality in this world. That is, what is that? The objects of enjoyment. That's all. Nothing else. So they also believed in a kind of present. Means, for them, the meaning of life was nothing more than enjoying objects available in the phenomenal world. So, these vishayas here means objects of enjoyment. Different things that we enjoy, either by hearing, by seeing, by touching, by smelling, and so on. Nothing more than that. Sometimes, you know, this particular part of Kariga verse, Sanskrit verse, is interpreted as a reference to an ancient school of hedonists or Epicureans and all that. Bohemians. They believed that the purpose, the supreme purpose of human existence is to enjoy the world. So, according to some commentators, modern and also classical commentators, this is a reference to a school of Bohemians and hedonists and Epicureans who lived maybe 6th or 7th century BC, around that time. Because Buddha refers to them. We come to know of this because Buddha, in his Tripitakas, the 3 important books which contain Buddha's original teachings in Pali language, who he preached in Prakrit, but they were written down in Pali language. Buddha's original teachings are contained in these 3 books. They refer to some of these hedonists and bohemians who lived in the 5th and 6th century BC in India. And then that's one. Then there is Loka Idi Tad Loka Vidaha. I'm referring to 21st verse. Now, this is a reference to a group of thinkers who believed in the doctrines enshrined in the mythological books known as Puranas. Puranas do contain some high philosophical and spiritual truths, like Bhagavata Purana, which is highly philosophical. But many of the Puranas contain certain stories and mythologies. And the purpose behind the narration of these stories, according to the author Vyasa himself, is to explain some subtle spiritual ideas using stories and tales as a medium. That's the purpose. So high philosophical ideas are explained through the medium of stories and mythologies. Such books are called Puranas. There are 18 important Puranas, mythological books, and 18 secondary mythological books, total 36. Some of them believe that there are different higher worlds after your death according to the good or bad deeds you have done in this world. You can attain different levels of existence. That's their view. So, if you have done very good meritorious deeds in this life, then you get a promotion, a kind of promotion you get after death. You go to a higher world. And on the other hand, if you have done a lot of evil deeds, then it will lead to some kind of degradation, and you will go to lower levels of existence. This is the view propounded by the authors of many of these mythological books known as Puranas. So sometimes the books you find Varuna Loka, Indra Loka, Prajapati Loka, and all this Loka means world, levels of existence. That's the idea behind. So Gaudapada is referring to these views. He says this is totally unacceptable. Because what are these worlds? These worlds are not eternal realities. If going to a higher world is the result of good deeds, then that cannot be a permanent position, a permanent status. Actions and the results cannot be eternal. Anything which is an effect cannot be eternal. Anything which is in the form of an effect cannot be eternal. See, a pot is the effect of two factors. One, the efficient cause, the pot maker. And then, of course, material cause, the clay. And then there are some instruments involved in the act of manufacturing a pot, which is called secondary causes. Well, but if you break it, it goes back to the material cause. So anything which is the result of something cannot be eternal. So that's why we said earlier, moksha, liberation, or the realization that we are the Supreme Consciousness is not the result of any action. People may ask this question when I explained earlier. If realization of our true nature, spiritual enlightenment or liberation or Atman is not the cause of any work, then why should we work for it? Now the answer is, all our efforts, we pray, we meditate, we do good deeds, we listen to spiritual talks, we read spiritually elevating works. What's the purpose of all these activities? The answer is, these activities remove the obstacle which stand in the way of our realizing our true nature. Just as light removes darkness. But the object that we see when light is brought is not a creation of light. Even if you don't bring light, it will remain there. The piece of rope is not a result of light that you bring to the room. Even if you don't bring light, it will be rope anyhow. Now, what is the purpose? What is the purpose of bringing light? Light removes darkness. Similarly, our efforts, good deeds, good thoughts, meditation, prayer, introspection, any noble idea, any noble elevating act, word or idea, thought, word or deed will help us in removing the darkness. It's like opening the window. Then you can see what is lying in front of you. So once the obstacle is removed, then the realization is imminent. So that's the idea behind. So the commentators and other Advaitin philosophers argue that these lokas can never be eternal. You may go to heaven as a result of good deeds. So a heaven is the effect and good deeds is the cause. Now, anything which is the product of a cause cannot be eternal because it comes into existence, and anything which comes into existence will cease to exist. So that's why Vedantins argue that these lokas, these different higher levels of existence cannot be the absolute reality. That's the argument. So then there is the eighth view, eighth school of thought is mentioned, Deva Iti Tadvidaka. Then there are people who argue, if you read the Rig Veda Samhita, which is incidentally the most ancient spiritual, religious and philosophical work in human history. Conservative means 4,000 by 5,000 BC, though it was early, it was thought it belonged to 1500 BC or 2500 BC, but now it knows it's at least 6,000, 7,000 BC. Now, in this book, Rigveda Samhita, there are innumerable gods and goddesses mentioned. Some people believe these gods and goddesses constitute the absolute reality. Now, people pray to these gods and goddesses. They pray for wealth, they pray for progeny, they pray for status. Some of these prayers are Pashyama Sharadasadam, Jivema Sharadasadam, etc. People pray for longitude. Let me be able to live for 100 years. Let me be able to see for 100 years. Sunuyama Sharadasadam. Let me be able to hear for 100 years. So prayer for material things. So these gods who answer your prayers, who provide you with material comforts, constitute the ultimate reality according to some school of philosophers. Advaitin say it cannot be. Because how can these gods and goddesses who just pray to you, to listen to your prayers, how can they be ultimate reality? If these gods and goddesses are independent and free to give any fruit, then your prayer has no special meaning. If these gods and goddesses give you material things, answer your prayers for material gains, material comforts, and if their answer is a direct consequence of your prayer, it means they are not independent. They only answer when you pray. That means they are not independent. So how you can't say that these gods and goddesses constitute absolute reality? Second point is, you are thinking of the absolute final cause of this world, the reality which is the origin of the universe, which is the sustaining principle behind the universe, and which is the destination of the universe, the point of dissolution of the universe. You are looking for a final cause. You are inquiring, you are investigating into the cause, and you start your journey, your investigation with the effect. Look around the world. Then you are thinking of the fundamental cause from which this world emerges. So you can't say that these gods and goddesses constitute the fundamental absolute reality, because there are so many in number. So you can't have so many absolute final causes. You cannot have more than one absolute reality. If it is more than one, it cannot be absolute reality. And if it is absolute reality, it cannot be more than one. Therefore, this position is not acceptable. That's a view of Advaitins or Gaudapada. Now, the idea is to be understood. Gaudapada does not accept the idea of a god sitting and creating this world within a definite, specified period of time. It is, according to Advaitins, it is a very arbitrary and illogical way of explaining the nature of this world. You can accept a compassionate, loving God who is merciful, who answers your prayers, etc. But that God is the visible manifestation of the invisible, immanent, omnipresent, transcendental reality. This is the view of Advaitins. So that view is not acceptable to Advaitins. The view is here, Deva idi cha tadvidaha. That is in the 21st verse. Then in the 22nd verse, another four schools of thoughts are referred to. Veda idi vedavidaha, yajna idi tadvidaha, bhokta idi cha bhoktravidaha, bhojyam idi cha tadvidaha. These are the means. First one is, now there are some orthodox conservative Vedic scholars. They will tell you that everything originates from the Vedas. Very conservative. In fact, they have preserved this Vedic literature. One of the great mysteries for historians, philologists, and also philosophers is the preservation of the Vedic literature over the last 5-6 millennia. Every syllable, every consonant, every diphthong, monophthong, everything is preserved through a series of stipulated, well-defined, well-structured method of teaching and learning. They are very traditional. They take bath early in the morning, and with great solemnity and sense of sanctity, they study these Vedas, they teach these Vedas. Now, these people believe that Vedas by themselves constitute the absolute reality. Here, Gaudapada is referring to these traditional Vedic scholars. They have no doubt preserved Vedic tradition, but they believe that these Vedas themselves constitute the absolute reality. You have to make a subtle distinction between the place of doctrines and theological books in Vedantic tradition and also in the so-called monotheistic religions. In Vedanta, books do have a place, but books do not constitute the absolute reality. Books are helpful to instruct, just as light is helpful to remove darkness. So also books help you, Vedas, Upanishads, all these books help you to remove the wrong notions that we have got. Vedas tell you, you are not this body, you are not this mind, you are not this intellect. There is something beyond all this, which you really are. That is the immanent, the omnipresent, the transcendental reality. And Vedas also point out, we cannot explain that. So Rig Veda Samhita is the most sacred book for Vedantins, one of the means from a theological point of view. Rig Veda Samhita says, Antaya Bhuvadinam Anantaya Mukam. It says, the language of the infinite, the language of spiritual experience is silence. Means spiritual experience cannot be explained or defined or described. But the language of the finite is verbosity. So all books ultimately can deal with only the finite, what belongs to time, space and causation, relative. But then books can tell you there is something beyond us, beyond the books, that is experience. That is the place of books or Vedas or scriptures in Vedanta, in the tradition of Advaita Vedanta. But there are schools of thought who are not Advaitins who will tell you that books themselves constitute the absolute reality. If you read the Vedas, that's enough. Such views were prevalent in many of the monotheistic religions of ancient times. Now also they are prevalent. But Vedanta goes one step ahead. It says books do have a place, but books only help you to remove the wrong notions we have. So that's why in Vedanta, Shastram tu ajnana nivartakam na jnana pravartakam. That is a grand statement of the great commentator Advaita Shankaracharya. All books, theological books, they remove ignorance, they don't produce knowledge. Knowledge comes when you realize the supreme truth within you. Because, as I said, you know, when you bring light, you understand it is a piece of rope, not of snake. It is not the light that produces this. Light only removes the wrong notion that it was a snake. The right notion that it is a piece of rope comes by itself. It is not a product of light. Light removes the wrong notion that it is a snake. But the right notion that it is a piece of rope is not the result of light. Even if you don't bring light, it remains a piece of rope. So, Vedanta or Advaita Vedanta takes you beyond books. It accepts the place of books. It accepts the place of theological works, doctrines, true. But it says the reality is experience and experience is beyond books. That's the point. So, the ninth school of thought, which the author of this book refers to, is the school of ritualists, ancient Mimamsakas or ritualists, who believed the Vedas themselves constitute the absolute reality. And then the tenth school is mentioned, yajna yadi cha tadvidaha. Yajna means rituals. Elaborate rituals which are explained or described in the Vedic literature, which require many days, lot of expenditure. So people will go on spending lot of money and time and energy in performing rituals. Many of such rituals were prominent in many of the ancient civilizations, the mentioned Judaism, in the Mayan, Incan, Aztec, and so many other civilizations. Different types of elaborate rituals were performed by many of these ancient civilizations, people who lived during those days. Now, the Advaitin says these rituals do not constitute the absolute reality. Of course, from a Vedic point of view, this yajnas, the word yajna is the word used here, means Jyotishtoma and other yajnas. There sometimes, you know, there were some great philosophers who are ritualists like Bodhayana and others who believed that performance of elaborate Vedic rituals is the essence of religion, philosophy and spirituality. Gaudapada says, no. He wants to tell you that the ultimate intuitive spiritual experience is the real goal of spiritual search or investigation. So in order to establish that point, he refers to other non-Advaitic schools of thought just to point out, to bring out their inherent inconsistencies. So now I think I have already discussed some points. You can, if you want, you can raise some topics for clarification. And then we can conclude the class. Before that, there is an announcement, of course. So you can, if there is any point which you want, yeah, please. Yes. Afterlife is accepted in Vedantic tradition, but afterlife is, the idea of afterlife is relevant only so long as you do not realize your true nature. So long as we think we are this body, this mind, this intellect, the one who suffers, enjoys, and so on, so long as we entertain this idea, we will have to be born again according to our deeds, karmas. No doubt about it. Second point is, rebirth is always the result of our conscious actions. Actions that we do with the strong feeling that I am the doer and I am also the enjoyer of the fruits of my actions. The moment you start doing your duties and responsibilities without any selfish motive, with complete detachment or non-attachment, then our actions won't produce any impression in our mind. Then our mind will be free from all tendencies and impressions. Mind will attain purity. When that purity reaches its highest degree of perfection, then you realize you are the Atman. Then there is no more rebirth. But so long as we entertain the idea that we are this body, we have to be born again because we identify with our actions. Yes.
But what is that experience like when you reach that point and there's no more rebirth? What would that be like?
Then you would no longer think of yourself as this body. You realize that you are the all-pervading consciousness, supreme reality.
But there would be no identity
at all. Absolutely, no identity. You may do your duty, you may perform your responsibilities, but you won't have the feeling, well, I'm doing this, I want to achieve the result of all these things.
You wouldn't even think yourself as having a name.
You may do all our duties and responsibilities, but within us, we'll have the feeling, well, I'm beyond all this. It's a higher level of experience. Scriptures sometimes compare the mental condition of such a liberated person to a king who plays violin in his own court. I shall give the example. See, if a king invites a professional violinist, a musician, the musician will come to the court and he will play, and he will be very anxious to put up a very good performance. He will be very anxious to please the king. But suppose the king himself plays in his own court. He is not eager to please anyone. He can really enjoy music. He is in no way attached. Because he won't be anxious to please his courtiers after all. He doesn't depend upon that. So similarly, a liberated person who has reached such a high level of spiritual consciousness, awareness, experience, he will be completely free from all worries, anxieties, and other things. He won't be indifferent towards his duties and responsibilities. No, he will be very efficient in performing his duties and his responsibilities. But within him, he will have the strong feeling, well, I'm not confined to the position of an agentship of this act. I'm not just an agent of when set of actions, who is going to enjoy the results of those actions. Within him, he will have the feeling, well, I'm beyond all this. still he'll be active. Yes.
No, that's
a point. See, according to Advaitins, these philosophies are different attempts, different levels of evolution towards explaining the truth completely. So, we have to remember, it was referring to this particular aspect of Vedantic tradition that Swamiji said, Vivekananda said, we are not traveling from error to truth, but from truth that's lower to truth that's higher, truth that is less complete towards a truth which is more complete, from a partial picture to a more complete picture. So the main inconsistency which Gaudapada points out is that all these systems of thought make a distinction between the absolute reality, the world, and also the living beings inhabiting this world. But Vedanta says the absolute reality is one, and that reality is the immanent principle residing in all living beings in this world. It is also the all-pervading reality. It is also transcendental reality. And it can never be explained, defined, or described. It can only be experienced. That's what Gaudapada says. So, in another context, referring to these non-Advaitic systems of thought, Gaudapada himself says, the verse is this: susiddhanta vyavasthasu dvaitino nischida dridham parasparam viruddhyande taihi ayam na viruddhyade. It's a famous verse, most probably in the third chapter of this book. Maybe we'll discuss that. Maybe there Gaudapada says all systems of thought other than Advaita, they quarrel and fight among themselves. Because it all non-Advaitic systems of thought will find fault with other non-Advaitic systems of thought. But Advaita doesn't fight with anyone because it understands that it is one with all. Shankara's commentary in Sanskrit is this: Taihi anyona virodhibhihi vaitikoyam dharma na viruddhyate yatha sukhastapada dibhisada. Shankaracharya says, I shall explain in English. What Shankaracharya says is this: this Advaita, non-dualistic philosophy, doesn't quarrel with anyone. Why? Because we are non-different from others. We are non-different, non-distinct from other systems of thought. How can you fight with your own hands and legs? Yatha suhastapada dibhisada. How can you fight with your own hands and legs? You will hurt yourself if you beat your own hand. Similarly, by quarreling with other systems of thought, we will be quarreling with ourselves, because we accept the non-distinction, non-difference, and perfect unity of Advaita and other systems of thought. So, this, in fact, it was this idea of Advaita which Swami Vivekananda refers to in his practical Vedanta lectures. Swamiji says this Advaita is in fact the foundation of the highest ethical philosophy. The infinite oneness of the soul is the eternal sanction for all morality, all ethics, and all good actions. You can't quarrel with anyone because you don't find anybody who is other than you. You are yourself. See, it's this aspect. So, Swamiji's high ethical ideas, according to him, had a foundation in the Advaitic philosophy. Any other? Now, Aisha, there is a short notice and an announcement for you. We will not have class next Friday, November 23rd, because of the Thanksgiving holiday. The previous day. The next class will be on Friday, November 30th. So please remember, we will not have class next Friday. The next class will be on Friday, November the 30th. Thank you. Om Peace.